Oh my God, this is such exciting news. We're coming out with the start of a Sell or Die network, and it's a podcast network, like-minded people, business-oriented people, creative, compelling podcasts that are going to help you learn more and earn more.
And so if you have a podcast, or you're thinking about a podcast, or you want a podcast, we can help you. The podcast network will broadcast your podcast and others all over the world. All you have to do is email sell or die at gitomer.com, and we will get back to you in a heartbeat.
Do you make any Philadelphia Eagles references?
I'll probably only show the two videos, the one where Brady drops the pass and one where Foles catches the pass in the end zone. And then
you mean the play with the illegal formation that wasn't called? That
yeah.
play?
Yeah, that one.
I just want to make sure we were talking about the same thing.
It was the ones with the fully inflated footballs. Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. This is Sell or Die, the only sales podcast on the planet that isn't afraid to say you're either selling or you're dying. Because there's no second place in sales. Win or go hungry. I'm Jeffrey Gitomer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And today, we are going to help you sell like hell.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a great guest coming up. But first, we want to introduce you to the one, the only, our man behind the curtain, behind the glass wall.
Wait, it's a glass window.
What? You know, it's a metaphor here. It's okay. Our amazing producer, Mr. Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. I want to remind everyone they can subscribe to this podcast and share it with their friends on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die and make sure to leave us a review. We always love getting feedback from the diehards out there.
Five stars or nothing.
That's
Doug
right.
Doug sounds amazing on the mic.
We're the Uber of podcasts. We want a five-star rating.
Except we don't rate you. You only rate us. And don't forget to join us for Motivation Mondays, our live sales meeting on Facebook.com/Jeffrey Gitomer. We put on the podcast feed as well. But if you join us live on Facebook, you get to see us, interact with us, engage with us, ask us questions, or just say hello.
Okie dokie. Let's get to the rest of the show. It's time to sell or die. Let's welcome Fred Schillmover. He is the CEO and co-founder of Insight Squared, all one word, by the way, if you're taking notes. He has helped grow this sales intelligence company from a single spreadsheet into one of Boston's premier tech startups. Now, prior to founding Insight Squared, Fred was a corporate development associate with Salesforce Ventures. And one interesting and I think admirable fact is that Fred has competed in the last 3 Boston marathons. That's a wow, I think. That's like running 100 miles.
Okay, so what kind of discipline does it take to train for a marathon? And how does that relate into the disciplines it's taken to start and found a company?
Yeah, I think they're closely related. So you said competed in the Boston Marathon. I would say I completed 3 Boston Marathons. I was in no way competitive. I'm a pretty terrible, terrible slow runner. But you know what I lack in talent, I try to make up for in grit. So and I think it's the same thing in work. Like it doesn't take talent to show up on time. And I read this article we were talking about it before the show. That looked at correlation between successful CEOs and their behavior patterns, and you know, pretty much all of them woke up before 5 in the morning. So there's nothing you could do to make up for hard work.
I agree.
I agree about that.
We've talked about it before. I was riding down the street with my one of my mentors, and I told the guy, I said, "You know what? I've never seen anybody luckier than you. Everything you touch turns to gold. You're just the luckiest guy on the planet." And he looked at me and goes, "Jeffrey, hard work makes luck."
Yeah. So when I do my, new hire onboarding, I do reference the Patriots a lot, so I guess we can talk football. So I talk about Julian Edelman, my favorite NFL player, and the guys that I met him. I'm like half an inch taller than him. We have both Jewish backgrounds, so that's one of the reasons I sort of love him. And you know, the greatest play in NFL history. I don't know if you remember it. It was a few years ago against the Baltimore Ravens when Julian Edelman went back, and I was like, "What is he doing? He's going to get sacked." And he threw a touchdown pass to Danny Amendola to win that playoff game. And you know, the caption under the photo says, "Luck favors the prepared."
So, tell me about your company. How did you actually decide to found it?
Yeah, so the idea came to me actually in business school. So I didn't come up with sort of the same background a lot of my classmates had. I met a lot of folks with management consulting backgrounds and finance backgrounds. And, you know, I was an IT guy who weaseled his way into venture capital. Tell that story another day. But I sort of looked at the toolkit that these guys had, the analytical toolkit that they had, and how they were able to break down a business or a market so quickly. And I thought, gosh, if I had this back when I was running an IT consulting company, how much more successful could that have been? And that sort of started the thinking, like, how can we essentially take a McKinsey consultant, put him or her in a box, and sell that for a couple $100 a month? That was the original idea behind Insight Squared, because sort of two problems exist. Either you're a small or mid-sized company and you can't afford to hire McKinsey, or you're a large business and like you can't wait 6 months or 3 months, or you can't wait time to figure out the answer to a question. You need it now. Like when I wake up in a cold sweat, as I sometimes do, it's the end of Q1 here, and I have no idea what we're going to book. Plus or minus a pretty wide variance. You need those answers to questions real time. And the market that we're disrupting, which is sort of legacy business intelligence, doesn't solve the need of the small and mid-sized companies, nor the large companies who can afford it, but don't get the value out of it. So our approach has been real simple. Like, there's this fundamental problem with analytics, where if you say any data you have, any question you have, we can answer that. Like, that's fundamentally, mathematically, a really complex problem. You can't escape that complexity. So how do you provide something that mere mortals, my co-founder likes to say, he wants to make a product so easy, even a CEO can use it. But the reality is like...
Wait, that's a classic.
It's a good one.
That is a total classic. I do these seminars, and these CEOs can't even fix their own slide. Literally. Anyway, keep going.
So, but that's the standard. So if every time I have to answer a question about our sales conversion rate or something to do with our sales pipeline or customer retention, if I've got to go talk to an analyst, that cycle isn't going to give me the answer that I need in the time that I need it. So our approach was, rather than say any data, any question, we picked a major. Our major is sales.
So I want to go back to what you were saying around legacy sales intelligence. Can you go a little bit deeper? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, am I in there?
Yeah. I mean, most business intelligence is essentially a better version of Microsoft Excel. So Microsoft, you know, these things have been around for 30 plus years. And normally when you think about like new wave of business intelligence, it's, you know, can we process more rows of data? Can I do fancier formulas? Can I have cooler, you know, charting types? And that's not what I need. I just need the answer to my question, and I need it now. And even the BI that's available today in the market is essentially that. It's just the problem that they create for their customers is you've got to figure out the questions, you've got to build the analysis. And what we did is sort of flipped it on its head and said, okay, we're going to be the experts in sales. We don't claim to be the smartest people in the room, but we've talked to, at this point, thousands of sales leaders and sales operations leaders, and we've asked them all the same question. If you could wave a magic wand and ask your data any question, what would help you run your sales team better? And what we found is there's actually an incredible amount of pattern. Like, yes, every business is unique. We're all special snowflakes. But at the end of the day, there's a lot that makes us similar. And as a result, we've essentially crowdsourced all of these questions, built the answers to them. And now people come to us and say, we want to run our sales organization. We want to run our sales operations function the way Insight Squared customers do. How do we do that?
This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek.
Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it.
I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
What is one of the most common questions?
So it's the simplest questions that are often the hardest to answer. So one of our simplest analyses we do is something called a sales funnel. You know, how do you convert from stage one to stage two? Most people know their win rate, like what percentage of my sales opportunities did I win. But what's incredible is most organizations don't know their stage by stage conversion rate. And even though we make the visualization stupid simple, the reality is there's a lot of logic that underlies that. So like sales cycles often aren't linear. Sometimes, you know, someone says, I'm going to buy tomorrow, and we move the opportunity to stage four. And they say, actually, you know, we hired a new VP of finance. We're back to the beginning. Sometimes sales engagement skip stages, and we make all sorts of decisions behind the scenes that if you had the best sales operations team on the planet, they would build all this logic, but we have the sort of economies of scale working with thousands of organizations to do that. So even something as simple as, you know, taking my sales cycle and dissecting it into its smallest components, we see that there's a challenge with that in the market.
And does it answer the question when the customer says, I want to think about it? Through stage one of your presentation, or stage two, where you've actually gone in and made the presentation.
Yep.
And at the end of the presentation, the customer says, this sounds great, I want to think about it.
So one of the things we do is look at sort of the overall corpus of data. So like, let's try to help you establish patterns in your data. So there's a lot of buzz around artificial intelligence, and you know, I hear talk
a
around
a lot
you know,
of buzz.
A little?
No, there's a hell of a lot of buzz.
And you know, I've heard conversations around like, you know, are we as salespeople eventually going to all be replaced with computers?
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, there's not often enough information in the sales data to answer that question. That's why the salesperson continues to have sort of this unique role. And the relationship plays such an important role in the sale. But when we step back and look at, you know, thousands of sales opportunities that you've run, we could start establishing patterns. And we could say, you know what, if a customer doesn't move from stage two to stage three within, you know, 7 days, given your company's history, they're unlikely to buy. And that's a risk factor that you should start looking at from a management perspective.
Or couldn't you just say they're not giving the right answers, or they're not providing the right perceived value?
Possibly. So when you see that, well, here's the point though. If when customers are successful, they move from stage two to stage three in 7 days, therefore the product must work or no one would be buying. And then what you can do is start looking at this through different lenses. And this is kind of sort of the recommended path that we have for our customers. So, okay, maybe someone's not giving the right value proposition. Let's look at conversion rates across your sales team. If you see that there's a particular gap with one person, then yeah, then you may have a training or delivery issue.
But you don't specify what it is. You only look at what the circumstance is from a big picture.
Yeah.
You don't get granular on the answer.
We can get granular on the source of the problem, but at right. the end of the day, most of it is correlation. It's very hard, you know, it's very hard for our app to say, you know what, you should go fire Tom today because Tom.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about go look at your value proposition or how it's being presented, but you don't go into what the value proposition actually says, because if 9 people are failing on the value proposition, then maybe it's the value proposition itself.
Yeah. Yep, and the way that you would see that is overall if you saw a downward trend in your conversion.
It seems like all of this would be reliant on the data that the salespeople are putting into the system. How, and in my experience managing sales teams, it's very hard to get salespeople to enter stuff into a CRM. How do you inspire salespeople to do that?
Yeah, I think that's the major trend that's happening in the industry. So, you know, 5 years ago, I would tell people, look, if you can have a data-driven sales team, you can differentiate against your competition. But in the future, it'll just be table stakes. Well, that future is now. And a couple things have happened, I think, that have changed the industry. So one, there's a bunch of technology that didn't exist before. You know, whether it's, you know, the ability to do sales calls, not in person, but over the phone through video. Mm-hmm. You know, we have tools that are doing natural language processing that may find that, you know, challenge in the value proposition that you have. Basically, a bunch of technology to create more efficiency in sales. And also what's happened is in the market that we're in, enterprise software, costs have come down. So what we're seeing is much more transactional type of a sales engagement, shorter sales cycles, lower prices. There is more data to analyze. And things are moving from the field to inside where you can sort of observe and control the environment a lot more. So yeah, I think there's an overall change in the industry that's happening. There's just a lot more data that's being collected.
Is the change in the industry going from outside to inside?
I think that's for sure. I mean, that's quantitatively supported. There's something like a 10-to-1 ratio of inside sales jobs to field sales jobs. It's not to say the field sales jobs will go away, but you know, you don't have to go and drive around your territory anymore, wasting half your time in the car when you can have, you know, half that time back to have more relationship building using technology.
Is it a Zoom meeting or a phone call?
I mean, for me, it's sort of the way that conversations work. It goes from you know from text to phone to video to in person as being the best path to sort of understand what people are saying. Like, it's very easy to misinterpret an email, or it's harder to be a jerk. It's easier to be a jerk or perceived to be a jerk for an email. It's much harder to do that when you're staring at someone in the face.
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like?
Okay, so you have all this data from all these different companies and sales teams across the globe. What are the biggest trends that you're seeing?
Good
Tell us
question.
Some of the secrets.
Ooh, very good. I'm leaning forward.
So here's one of the things that we're seeing, and it bears in the data, but also in some other things, which is the rise of sales operations as a profession. So last year we held our first, you know, sort of our inaugural user conference, but really it was all around, it was called RAMP. It's in August. We're holding it again this year in Boston. So if you're in, you know, sales operations, revenue operations, marketing operations, it's a great place to go and learn. And one of the things that we saw was how diverse the backgrounds were, the people in the role, how earlier stage the companies were that were hiring sales operations. So sales operations isn't brand new. Like, there's been sales operations in Fortune 500 companies for forever. But what we're seeing now, whether you've raised venture capital or you're just trying to grow, we're seeing smaller and smaller organizations rely on sales operations to sort of build that scaffolding to get them to the next stage. So we're seeing a huge inflow of people into the profession from a wide array of backgrounds. So that's been a really interesting trend over the last couple of years. And it was great to see, you know, how many people. We invited sales operations professionals to the conference. And what we had was about a third sales ops, marketing ops, and then revenue ops. So I think that's another trend that we're seeing, where sales and marketing are sort of inexorably linked at this point in time.
I'm finding that the VP of marketing has to report to the VP of sales.
Yeah. I think they're fundamentally different functions. So, you know, in our organization, we have a head of marketing and a head of sales, much like we have a head of product and a head of engineering. And in some organizations, those two can be put together.
Yeah.
I think all of these
organizations certainly have to be harmonious no matter what.
Yeah, to some extent, it depends on the talent that you have around. It depends on, you know, other parts of the business of how you structure it. Like, same thing with operations. You know, in some organizations, operations reports to sales. In our organization, it reports to finance. It's sort of a central team. To me, it seems like, you know, when I look at our management team, you know, marketing has this uniquely creative component to it. Obviously, you have to be analytical today as a marketer. You have to know how to integrate with sales. But there is this creative component in marketing, I think, that is unique and perhaps makes for a unique leader. On the other hand, I think sales has a sort of different persona for what that lead person is. And more, I think that person needs to have this sort of industrialization focused mindset. So when we just brought on a new head of sales, and one of the things I asked for the executive search firm to do was find me someone ideally who had an engineering undergrad.
Wow.
Because I think that's rare, a salesperson with an engineering undergrad.
I would think, when you get a lead, you got to convert it to a sale, and that is the real responsibility of the sales VP. Marketing could say, I brought you the leads, and the sales guy could say they were lousy leads.
I mean, it's a whole production line. You've got you know, marketing generating demand. We have some division of labor, so we have a BDR team or an SDR team that sort of sits at the intersection of sales and marketing. I know there's a lot of debate on, you know, where should the BDRs report to? Is that a marketing function? Because it's essentially an extension, we don't want our BDRs being as human marketing automation. But, you know, in our organization, the BDRs are sort of the farm league. They get promoted into the sales organization. So they're fundamentally salespeople. So I think it depends on your business model. I think it depends on the talent that you have around as well.
So am I going to be presenting at this event?
We should talk about it. What's the topic?
The topic is anything you want. The topic should be monetizing the opportunities that you have using every technology available.
Do you make any Philadelphia Eagles references?
Only show the two videos, the one where Brady drops the pass and one where Foles catches the pass in the end zone.
You mean the play with the illegal formation that wasn't called? That play?
Yeah, that one.
I just want to make sure we were talking about the same thing.
It was the ones with the fully inflated footballs.
No comment.
Oh, man.
So I love that. I totally love that.
We're going to be talking about the Eagles for the next 50 episodes, aren't we?
No. Not till next season. And then that's it.
You guys holding him to that?
But Fred, seriously, how many people are coming to this event?
So last year we were told the capacity was 200. It's actually hard to get sales operations professionals out. They actually are pretty busy people. We actually ended up having 250, so it was kind of standing room only. This year we're aiming for 400 plus.
I was in charge of sales ops in my former company, and I can tell you that I did a lot more web-based events, like virtual events, than actual travel to events.
Yeah. We were spread about 50% of the people traveled to Boston for this event.
Wow.
We did it at Fenway. It was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Go on the field.
I'm a Yankee fan, but that's cool.
Yeah, it was a great venue, but I think also it's a group of people that, in my opinion, doesn't get enough attention. Mm-hmm. Like we're seeing sales operations become more and more strategic, and we're seeing some of the best sales leaders now sort of pair up and travel, you know, whether it's from job to job or what have you, with the sales operations professional. So
I don't know if our diehards know exactly, like if all of them know exactly what a sales ops person is. What do they do? I know because I did it, but can you elaborate on that?
By the way, even that's, I don't think it's as defined as it will be in the future. I think some places sales operations is, you know, the person who runs the reports or the person who does the, you know, commissions calculations. But what we're seeing is there's the person who's the Salesforce admin. And sales operations typically includes all of those things. But what we're seeing is a lot more around strategy planning for sales, and how do we do our territory planning, and how do we think through aligning compensation with the company goals, and being a partner, sort of a day-to-day partner to sales leadership versus a back office function. So that's the big change that we're seeing.
And are these people vocal to the sales team or only to the leadership team?
In our organization, sales ops plays, I mean, here's another function they play, is sort of deal desk or deal support. So sales operations is there to help our sales team successfully execute transactions, whether it's dealing with negotiation strategy or dealing with legal review or any parts of the procurement process on our customer side. It's a sort of, they're in there in the trenches with the sales team.
So should the topic of my talk be, it's all bullshit unless you can make the sale?
Well, how can you make the sale if you don't deal with all the details?
Well, I'm saying it's all bullshit unless you can make the sale. So there has to be a bridge between everything that's done in the data world versus everything that's done in the sales world in order to be able to make that marriage happen.
Yeah,
if I'm out in the field and you're giving me,
can't just be there intellectualizing about cool ideas.
Exactly.
Right.
One of my investors likes to say, all businesses that fail for one reason.
Right.
They run out of cash. So
exactly.
We need sales to bring in the cash.
So what was it like raising? You've talked about investors a couple of times. What was it like raising money? How difficult or not was that?
It's interesting. So I had a good advantage, with the school I went to and the background that I have and the networks that I have. I think that there's probably more money out there to raise than there should be, or let me say another way, that can be deployed well.
Mm-hmm. Do we know what school he went to? What school did you go to?
Yeah, where did you go to school?
Now you're making me say it. So I'm a Boston guy. So I went to Tufts and Harvard for business school.
Oh, cool.
Congratulations.
My mom's very proud.
He's blushing a little bit. That's very humble. That's nice.
Actually, I had a cousin that went to Tufts and she was freaking brilliant.
One of my friends went to Tufts. My mom really wanted me to go there, but I didn't want to go to school in Boston.
It's a tough school.
Yeah. So it was interesting when I graduated business school and decided to start a company. My mother would introduce me around as her unemployed son.
So cool, that's very nice.
That was fun. Very nice. Your question about
that sounds as Jewish as it can get.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
from one Jew to another.
Right, exactly.
That is true. I think very often raising money is viewed as the successful outcome, and people are thrilled when they've raised money. Every single time we've raised money and the funds have wired, I felt sort of the pressure crank up a couple dials because
Of course, because you have more accountability,
right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've set the bar that much higher that we have to cross.
Do you use your own data?
It's really fun when we've done fundraising, and a big part of the due diligence is just giving a login to prospective investors and say, have at it. Back to the point about transparency, I think that's really well appreciated. And it's also fun doing a product demo and explaining sales metrics of your own company at the same time.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's really cool.
And does your who explains it? Do you explain it, or do you let some of your guys explain it, or women?
I better be able to explain the numbers or we've got some problems.
Yeah.
But certainly it's a team effort. And actually, one of the things we hear is, investors, whether it's in venture capital or private equity, come to us and say, look, we've seen Insight Squared and, three different boards that we're a part of. We like it. Why don't we recommend it to more of our companies? So it's actually been a really great sort of distribution.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
That is cool.
Did your investors become salespeople?
Our investors are very good salespeople for us. I have an intro this morning in my inbox from one of our investors.
That's great.
I love that.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. That tells you you're on time and on the money.
All right. So you're a board member of TUG, an organization that brings together tech entrepreneurs with social enterprises that support at-risk youth. Talk to us about that and why it's a cause that's close to your heart.
TUG is great because Jeff Fagnan, who's one of our investors and the founder of TUG, would describe TUG as sort of this API, using tech lingo, of course, this API between the tech community and the nonprofit world. And one of the challenges when, we're working 80 hours a week to get a company off the ground, we don't have time or really like intellectual bandwidth to think through what's our sort of corporate social responsibility program. And yet what we found, was like when we took a couple hours or a day out to go and be part of the community. Yeah, it's a good thing to do because it's the right thing to do, but it also like fundamentally impacts the culture of a business. Like you know, so around the holiday time, we did this event here in Boston where we were personal shoppers for some of the low-income families in Boston. What that meant is we brought people into the Salvation Army and we walked them around and got them, you know, coats and jackets and toys for their kids. And the group that went and did that morning, I could see it on their faces. Like when they came back for the day, they were so invigorated. And like my point is you get a lot more out than you put in terms of time. And not only is it good for the individuals, but it's also good for the company. Like it does, it is good eventually for the bottom line of the company when you have a group of people who are engaged and feel like they're part of something that's bigger than themselves and bigger than the company. So what Tug aims to do is to make it easier for the tech community, and a lot of the tech community are earlier stage companies that don't have a head of, you know, social or welfare or whatever the right title is. I'm sorry for not knowing it, to make it easier for us to participate in the community in a positive way. We also focus on startup nonprofits. So it's kind of cool because not only can we give our time, but now if this group is thinking about, you know, how do I market to my community, or, you know, what does it mean to manage an organization, we can lend expertise in addition to time. So like at Insight Squared, we were part of this 1-1-1 pledge that Salesforce.com started, and in particular focus on this sort of 1% of time. So every employee at Insight Squared can spend 1% of their business time, essentially that's 2 days a year on average, during work time participating in community events, and Tug makes it easier for us to do that. So when I did run the Boston Marathon, it was all through Tug, and I ran it for three of the nonprofits that we were fortunate enough to work with. Inner City Weightlifting, that takes sort of at-risk youth, folks who have you know, been in jail or, you know, committed violent crimes, and trains them on and teaches them how to be personal trainers, and creates, you know, social mobility. We worked with ran for Resilient Coders, that one, you know, did a session here where they teach underprivileged youth how to code and give them again that upward career mobility. And most recently, last year, I ran for Y2Y, which is a youth-run shelter for homeless youth.
Wow.
If you can't get behind that.
Yeah. Something's definitely wrong. Yeah.
And wow. our team volunteers at each of these organizations. You know, Inner City Weightlifting comes here twice a week and trains our team. You know, Resilient Coders got some free real estate out of the mix. And we, you know, especially during times when students are away, Y2Y needs us to come in there and essentially just cook. And it's a foundational part of our culture here at Insight Squared, and there's no way we could have done that without Tug.
Thank you for listening to Sell or Die. If you like what you heard, make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. Give it a star on Overcast and tell a friend.
Tell both your friends. Just don't tell your competition. You can follow me on Twitter at Gittimer and Jen at Sales in Any Minute.
Send your sales questions to sellordie@gittimer.com. We'll be back next week with Motivation Monday and another amazing guest.
Until then, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And we're reminding you to get out there and sell or die.
Even if your ass falls off.
Sell or Diehards, attention. If you love the show, make sure you have subscribed to the show.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes and give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend, tell both your friends about the best sales podcast on the planet.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true seller diehard, and we thank you.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.